This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Good morning. You're listening to Pacifica Radio KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. Stay tuned for Go Vegan Texas. Today we bring you live and in person Dr. Will Tuttle, PhD, author of one of the most important books of this era, The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony, that presents what is probably the most comprehensive case yet for eating a diet and creating a society free from cruelty and violence. Its central focus is the idea that cruelty to animals, particularly farmed animals, sets a tone in our society that plays out in interpersonal violence, war, and environmental destruction. It is a provocative thesis, one that merits the attention of all who claim to value life. Eating animal foods and flesh is a fundamental cause of our dilemmas, but we will squirm every which way to avoid confronting this inconvenient truth. It is our defining blind spot, and yet it is the essential missing piece to the puzzle of human peace and freedom. You will hear Dr. Tuttle this morning and at his lecture and book signing this evening define compassion as ethical intelligence. It is the capacity to make connections and the consequent urge to act to relieve the suffering of others. Like cognitive intelligence, it is suppressed by the practice of eating animals. You will hear this morning and tonight at a free talk and book signing that justice, equality, veganism, freedom, spiritual evolution, and universal compassion are inextricably linked, and that peace does, in fact, begin on the fork. The World Peace Diet this morning on Go Vegan Texas, plus an early Mother's Day story about a Clear Lake mom who came to the rescue of a mother alligator after a Bay Area teenager shot a bow and arrow close to her eye. We open with one of Dr. Tuttle's piano solos. Welcome to Go Vegan Texas. That was End of the Dreams, a piano solo by our guest this morning, Dr. Will Tuttle, author of The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. Dr. Tuttle has been a guest on Go Vegan Texas several times, and we now have the privilege of welcoming him in our studio. Good morning, Dr. Tuttle.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
And Madeline Tuttle.
Good morning.
Good morning. And so we met you in 2002 at our first animal rights conference. It was just almost a month after we started Go Vegan Texas, because we are getting ready to celebrate our fifth birthday. And you had, was this your first album, Animal Song?
Actually, that was the fourth album.
Fourth.
But we wanted to create an album that would really allow people to connect with the spirit and the beauty and the presence of the beings that we typically just see as objects to be eaten. So there's songs on there like the cow song, the pig song, chicken song, turkey song, duck song, geese song,
almost
lamb
all of which
song.
We have played.
Right, and then there's other ones of the wild animals because they're also losing their habitats, primarily because of the expansion of animal agriculture throughout the world. It takes away the habitat of the wild animals that inhabit the earth. So we wanted to create an album that would really honor all the animals of this earth.
It's just beautiful. We played a pig song just 2 weeks ago for our Easter song. We did a special show called Hell to Hog Heaven. It was about women who have started pig sanctuaries and farmed animal sanctuaries, and it was really lovely to start your pig songs and the little squeaks of the pigs. It was really sweet. And as a matter of fact, one of the guests we're going to have in a few moments is a Clear Lake mom who has helped rescue one of the wildlife, an alligator that was in a bayou, and we'll talk to her shortly about that. It would be lovely to have an alligator song on here.
Right.
Or do you? Or maybe you do. Well, this is great. This is so wonderful, the animal songs. And we have played like the turkey song and Thanksgiving, so we really, our listeners are very familiar with you. Such a pleasure to have you in Houston with us and fresh from this wonderful trip that you all took to Ecuador. And Shirley Brooks Johnson, who is the co-founder of Go Vegan Texas, is going to introduce you, Will, because she interviewed you 5 years ago at the first animal rights conference we attended when we were aware of this beautiful album of yours, Animal Songs. And that interview aired on Go Vegan Texas, and then twice in the last year she also interviewed you about this new book, The World Peace Diet. So good morning, Shirley Wilkes Johnson, in your garden paradise in West Columbia, Texas.
Good morning, Janice, and good morning, Dr. Tuttle. And
good morning.
And is it Madeline? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yes. Yes, good morning.
Well, I'm looking so forward to meeting both of you tonight at Barnes & Noble at your lecture and your book signing. And let me tell people a little bit about you. And Janice sent out such a wonderful promo this morning. I wish everyone could see it. She talks about you and all the things you are doing. Your book, The World Peace Diet, is just the most amazing book, and you have both of you are dedicating your lives to creating world peace and helping educate people about the fundamental reasons why we don't have peace on this planet. So I really appreciate what you're doing. And you've got so many credentials. You're educated in at Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley. You got your PhD and you're a Zen Dharma master, Buddhist monk, writer, educator, and you do all of this beautiful healing music that when my daughter first heard your music, Dr. Tuttle, she said it was so beautiful that it brought tears to her eyes. And Madeline is a visionary artist, and I hope we'll have a little bit of time to talk about that, because you both are just, and I want to tell people your website is what?
It's just www.willtuttle.com. It's my name.
It's a feast for the eyes. And I hope everybody will go and look at it. And Dr. Tuttle, I met you first in 2002 at the Animal Conference, Animal Rights Conference 2002, when I interviewed you, and you introduced yourself. You said, "I am Will Tuttle, and my passion is veganism." And I just sensed such a spirituality about you during that interview, which we played on Go Vegan Texas. And I've just been so impressed every time. I haven't met you in person, so this is going to be a real treat tonight. I do want to say that you had suggested that we serve some kind of refreshments tonight before the lecture, and I think that's always such a good idea because people don't understand how well vegans eat. So I do want to say that Banyan Foods, it's a mother and son Texas only business. They make tofu, soy milk, and vegan appetizers, kimchi, vegan egg rolls of all kinds. with a pineapple tomato dipping sauce, and they make all sorts of things, tamales. So they will be serving little snacks tonight, and I can't wait to try those, and I can't wait for you to try them, too.
And the whole evening is coordinated by Society of Peace, and it stands for People for the Earth, Animals, Compassion, and Enlightenment. And this beautiful...
this is the first peace society that has understood that that I know of, that peace cannot just be for humans. It must be for all beings and the planet.
Right, right. Great.
So you and your wife travel around the world, Will, and what do you see? How is veganism growing? Are you seeing that happening worldwide?
Yes, I think the ideals of veganism are growing, even though in some ways the opposite is also happening. I mean, there's definitely more animals worldwide being forced to endure the horrors of factory farming as more and more people are eating animals because it's getting cheaper. I mean, the United States is exporting factory farming to third world countries so that typically people who couldn't afford flesh-based diets are now being able to afford them. But on the other hand, at the same time, the importance of eating low on the food chain for the environment, and also I think the message of veganism, which is really more of a message of compassion and spiritual awareness, is also growing. And even in Ecuador, for example, there's a vegetarian society in Guayaquil where they really talk about the ideas of veganism and the importance of having compassion for all life. So I think these are really positive developments, and I think in this country, and in many ways, the world does model itself on the United States still. So each one of us as a resident of the United States, I think, has an enormous impact on not only in our country, but on the rest of the world if we make a transformation in our own lives. And I think for sure there's probably nothing more powerful that anyone can do as a personal statement for world peace and for justice and for compassion and harmony than to stop the behavior of paying other people to confine and mutilate and kill animals for food. It's not only really, I guess, pretty much conclusively been shown that it's more healthy for, you know, that's sort of a self-centered reason. It's not completely self-centered, because if I'm more healthy, it's much easier on the rest of society. But also in terms of the impact on other humans, who we force our brothers and sisters. We have whole armies of people that do nothing but stab and kill animals. And whenever we force other humans to become numb and desensitized, it hurts everybody.
Well, and, you know, this is not only prevention. April is Prevention of Animal Cruelty Month, but it's really good that you're on Go Vegan Texas this morning, and we'll be speaking tonight, because I don't know if Janice mentioned this. This is Animal Cruelty Human Violence Awareness Week. So this is...
That's good.
And it's becoming well known, this connection, but what people don't see so clearly is what you talk about in your book, is that this hidden cruelty, I mean, if there is a connection, and we believe there is, between animal cruelty and human violence, then this hidden cruelty that is so vast that it pervades the entire world, how can we have peace?
Right. Well, that's, I think, one of the central questions that I address in the book, which is the mentality, really, that underlies our culture. And really, I think it's the living core of our culture is a mentality of exclusion. It's also a mentality of violence, oppression, and exploitation, and seeing beings as things. It's a mentality of commodifying beings, of seeing beings as commodities that are used. And it's invisible in the sense that we don't really have a word for it. It's just assumed that when a little boy or little girl loses his or her mother's breast, if they're lucky enough to get that, then they pretty soon, right after that, they're eating little jars of veal and chicken and turkey and ham and cheese and so forth. And from that, they continue this behavior on So in the most powerful way, we're taught that beings are simply here for us to consume. And this hasn't been seriously questioned, and I think it's at the very core of the mentality that eventually plays out in violence towards each other. Because when we treat other living beings that we know have feelings, everyone knows if we have dogs or cats or companion animals, that they have interests, that they don't like to be harmed, that they have not only physical, the capacity to feel physical suffering, but also psychological and social suffering, that when we just inflict this, not just on in a small way, but we're talking about millions of animals every day that are slaughtered for food and have their interests systematically denied them, and that creates a numbing. It's a sense of basic disconnectedness. So as little kids, we are trained in our culture to disconnect the reality on our plate from the reality that it took to get it onto our plate. And this sense of disconnectedness, which pervades our culture when it comes to animals that are used for food, really reduces our ethical intelligence as well as our cognitive intelligence. I think that's one of the things that just hasn't been talked about. You know, I could go through an entire, you know, PhD program, I mean, many years of school, and never once read anything after reading hundreds and thousands of books on.
Well, the news has come out recently that vegetarian children actually have higher IQs, and Janice has talked about it on Go Vegan Texas, so, and you refer to that in your book also.
Right. Well, that's I think part of that is probably this idea that intelligence is the ability to make connections, and so if we're not, you know, practicing disconnecting on a regular basis through the choices of the foods that we're eating, then we're more able to make connections, and I think our cultural intelligence will vastly increase if we begin to take into consideration what we really know in our hearts, which is that animals have their own purposes, that they love to live and to celebrate their lives, and that if we reduce them to mere objects, we really reduce ourselves. And this is the main thing that our culture doesn't understand. We have a culture, I have a chapter in the book called Reductionist Science and Religion. But we have a culture in which really all the institutions are based on reducing beings to things. Our science does that. Our religion in many ways does that. Our educational system does that. We reduce animals, and then we practice that so pervasively, and we end up reducing ourselves. The ancient spiritual teachings always point to the idea that whatever we do to others, we end up doing to ourselves. The more we harm others, the more we harm ourselves. The interconnectedness of all life, I think, is really the fundamental truth in many ways of the spiritual teachings of the world, and the interconnectedness of the welfare of all of us. And so if I harm another, I'm really harming myself. And we've tended to leave animals out of the equation as if they didn't matter, the same way we did maybe 150 years ago with people of color. You know, they just didn't matter. They were here for us to use. Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, people have systematically denied, for example, in the West, we denied that women had a soul. That took quite a while. It wasn't, you know, Thomas Aquinas, for example, said women are not rational, so they don't have a soul. And at a certain point, the men decided, okay, we'll grant women souls here. But we still haven't granted animal souls because we want to use them. You know, that's the basic thing. We don't want to connect with them, and we've seen this. I think whenever we have a being or a person that we want to harm, then we have to reduce them, because otherwise our heart would naturally feel sympathy and compassion for them. So we have to distance ourselves, numb ourselves, disconnect ourselves. And we do that with animals systematically that we use for food, and it's a very small step from that to doing it to people who we think are less than us. And so that's the mentality of exclusion, and which is really the foundation of the mentality of privilege. And so we hear all of this discussion about why we have war in the world, and why we have environmental devastation, why we're not taking care of the planet, why we allow starvation and habitat destruction and all these things. And really, we have to understand, I think, and this is the point I think that I try to address also in the book quite a bit, is that whatever we do to animals, we create the mentality within ourselves, and we will do it to each other. We'll do it in Iraq and Iran. We'll do it to the rainforest. We will do that because that's the training that we have at the very deep level, ritualized in our meals over and over again, three times a day, of disconnecting, of really seeing ourselves as predators. You know, we're eating as predators. We're eating the bloody flesh of animals. And it's a predatory mentality. We're not actually maybe doing the actual stabbing, but we are paying people to do the stabbing, and then we eat the animals, or we eat the secretions of those animals, who also always get stabbed and killed and have their babies stolen from them, the cows and hens and so forth. And so that underlying mentality is very strong in us, of being predatory. And so we create a predatory capitalist system, which inevitably will create a wealthy elite, and we all end up preying on each other, whereas the spiritual teachings emphasize just the opposite of that, that the truly wise and enlightened and awakened people are not predatory. They are here to bless others, to protect others, to encourage and be loving and kind, to especially to those who are vulnerable. That's what Jesus emphasized, and what the other great spiritual teachers of all the traditions have emphasized, that that's really the evolutionary goal of humanity, is towards this spiritual awakening where we get beyond this idea that we're predatory. So when someone becomes a vegan, that's, I think, the most positive, powerful, revolutionary act that anyone can make in this culture.
So that puts responsibility into our own hands. I mean,
right.
You know, we feel so helpless sometimes about changing things. We want the world, as the song goes, we're waiting for the world to change. But we have that power to
exactly.
do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by going vegan. But it's so difficult for so many people to get
right.
that. I mean, to understand. If they read the book, they will understand.
But it does start with, you know, children. Children love animals. They, you know, they love farm animals. They sing, you know, Old MacDonald had a farm, and they don't associate that that's an animal on their plate. You know, we give food names like hot dogs and hamburger and ham and veal and steak, and I never knew. I never associated that, or venison with a deer, you know, until I realized, oh my gosh, that's Bambi. And so
and these are tactics of disconnecting.
It's a betrayal.
Well,
children
actually,
who lie to them.
Dana Forbes, which was the original founder of the Houston Vegetarian Society, I interviewed her years ago for an article, and she said when she was just 3 or 4 years old, she asked her mother why the chicken that they were eating and the chicken in her book had the same word for them, and her mother actually explained to her that we kill the chickens and eat them. And Dana said even at that early age she thought that she must not be understanding something, and that she felt betrayed, and she knew that there was something terribly wrong. And so even very young children can, you know, do understand, but they're not given an opportunity usually to understand.
Exactly. And I have a couple of chapters in the book that really go into why this indoctrination is so powerful. It's really, I think, all the species, the most powerful thing that the parent the parent teaches the offspring is what is food and how to eat. And so when we're taught that by our own mothers and fathers and culture, teachers and everything, it is hard to question it. There's a lot of deep resistance to questioning it. But it's an ancient teaching. You know, veganism, sometimes people think that's a new idea because the word was just invented in 1945 by Donald Watson in England.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really an ancient idea that Pythagoras and many great spiritual teachers have emphasized, that
thinkers of all time, many
right,
of them.
Right, that we will not, as a human society, ever have a mentality that's qualified for peace and harmony and justice. with each other until we give that peace, harmony, and justice to those who are at our mercy and to whom we show no mercy or peace or justice. We act really as terrorists, as rapists, as slaughterers and murderers and baby killers, really, to these other beings. And how ironic it is that we then think that we are deserving of a world of peace and kindness and harmony for ourselves. And I think in the future it will be seen that in many ways the peace movement and the movements for peace, if they don't understand this, will be seen merely as ironic. If we don't understand the interconnectedness of the violence that we perpetrate against beings who are sentient, as we are, who have a central nervous system, and all vertebrate animals, are sentient and feel like just as we do, that that blind spot is so overwhelming, I think, because of the deep guilt that we feel for harming them so systematically and so routinely and so heartlessly. But when we do allow ourselves to awaken, and when we are able to have these kinds of dialogues where we can talk about really what's so obvious but so hidden, then it creates a field of freedom that begins to radiate into our culture. And as more and more people stop the behavior of paying other people to kill animals and torture them,
so we have to reach a critical mass.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that is the changing the behavior that allows our consciousness then to finally evolve to a higher level and begin to actually be capable of loving kindness and peace for everyone.
I want to remind our listeners, and this is Govegan, Texas, and you're hearing the voice of Dr. Will Tuttle. He's the author of The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. And he's our guest this morning, along with Madeline Tuttle, visionary artist. And I want to hear from you too, Madeline. They will be at a free talk and book signing this evening at Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble at 7626 Westheimer at 7 p.m. And the Houston-based and 100% vegan Banyan Foods will furnish appetizers during the reception, which starts at 6:30. And Shirley Wilkes Johnson, who you are hearing from her home in West Columbia, is going to be introducing Dr. Tuttle tonight. So I just want to really encourage everybody to come. Society of Peace is hosting this event with Go Vegan Texas, and it's going to be wonderful to hear you in person.
Yes, I'm glad you said that, Janice. I almost forgot that we're trying to get people to the lecture to meet Dr. Tuttle and Madeline in person. And my book is so worn and so marked up and everything. I need a new copy, so I want to get an autographed copy. And I want to encourage people. I want to buy two at least so I can give one to my library, our local library, because it is so important that this word gets out and that people have an opportunity to become enlightened about, you know, how they can help create world peace.
Shirley, I read on in Will's website that you were in Washington, D.C., and you saw somebody reading the World Peace Diet on the bus.
That was interesting. Actually, no, it was a friend of mine. Saw someone reading the World Peace Diet, and it turned out that it was one of the Senate aides, and she said that the book is going all around the Senate. I was in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
So we have this idea that people tonight could buy the copy of this book and send it to your congressional representative or senator. Right. Wouldn't that be wonderful to send this to Kay Bailey Hutchinson and John Cornyn? And, my representative, Shirley, Sheila Jackson Lee is with us against the war, but some of your representatives are not, so this would be a great time to enlighten them. We need to get out of this war.
Yes, and yes. You know, what I like that you say in your book, Dr. Tuttle, is that that we can pray for peace. I can't find it right now. We can pray for peace. We can go to peace protests. We can try to work to make the world a better place. But as long as we're buying the milk, dairy, meat, and eggs of tortured and abused animals, that, you know, that it's all in vain. That there's no way that we can, no matter what we do, we cannot create peace. That is the one, that's the fundamental cause of the violence on this planet. This hidden thing that you say is our defining blind spot.
Yes, exactly. And what goes along with that, actually, it's very important to understand, is that it's really primarily female animals that are abused, and the female reproductive systems. This is really what the, you know, the first scientists really were, the original herders, actually, ironically, in what is now Iraq, in the Middle East, where they first started to herd cows. First it was sheep and goats, and then eventually cows. And they learned how to manipulate the feminine reproductive cycles to then also manipulate the offspring of these animals to maximize milk production, meat production, wool production. And this mentality of manipulating nature, of manipulating living beings, seeing them as just mere units of production, has continued. And really, the society that emerged at that time was a total, that was the last revolution I think we ever had in this culture, because out of that came a culture with a wealthy elite, where beings were seen as things, and the masses of people had to fight and be dominated really by a few wealthy people who had all the capital. Capital meant cows and sheep at that time, and it still does, actually. And but they were rewarded by getting to eat some meat at the end of the day. So it was this whole hierarchical system, and women began to, instead of being equal with men, were seen as chattel property. And this domination of the feminine principle, I think, is really a thread through our culture, and today it's still very strong. It's the female animals that are most abused, dairy cows, hens, female pigs. They are just so dominated and abused, and I think we know deep down in our hearts that there's nothing more sacred and precious and beautiful than these feminine functions of nurturing the young and caring for the young and the giving birth to the beautiful offspring, and then to so heartlessly and coldly and systematically artificially inseminate these females, to steal the babies always from the mothers, and to abuse this feminine principle, I think has really damaged and continues to damage, and it really couldn't happen without it already being severely damaged, the feminine, nurturing, intuitive dimension of ourselves as human beings. And so I think this is where we really spiritually suffer and cause so much suffering, is in this chronic, invisible, ritualized abuse of females and the sacred feminine function of animals, and then we do that to women, and we do that to the feminine dimension of ourselves, which is the receptive, sensitive, nurturing aspect of ourselves, and we create boys who become men who are taught to disconnect from their natural feelings of sensitivity and kindness and compassion, and to be tough and to be really capable of systematic violence and cruelty, and we create, and that's really what's happened over the last 8 to 10,000 years of this system. And I think our culture at its very heart yearns to awaken and for a positive, benevolent revolution where we are reawakening our sensitivity for all life. And that begins with the animals that we systematically brutalize for food. And from there it can begin to radiate into our culture. And so this is the most powerful thing that we can do, I think, is to question the assumptions of our culture. That's called leaving home. You know, we question the assumptions of your culture and then become an agent for positive change. And
you call for a revolution of one to join. Each person can become a revolution.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a very positive, benevolent revolution that's required, because otherwise we've created a technology that's so powerful. If we keep treating the earth and animals and other beings as mere commodities, we're capable of destroying each other very easily.
And have we discussed ethical intelligence? Have we touched on that?
Yeah, ethical intelligence. What I in the book, it's I think it's important to realize, as I said earlier, that intelligence is the ability to make connections. So our intuition is very much connected with cognitive intelligence, with understanding the big picture and the interconnectedness of things. We have an educational system really that divides, and we create, you know, separations between things and an analytical process that doesn't see the interconnections. And when we do that in an ethical dimension, that's compassion. Compassion is the ability to make connections ethically. And we, in our heart, we feel our connection. Like, for example, as Americans, North Americans, we feel our connection maybe with dogs and cats. So we're outraged when we hear about the Chinese building these factory farms and putting St. Bernards in there and, you know, killing millions of St. Bernards every year for meat. Because we have a feeling for dogs, you know, we have make a connection, and they think the same thing about us for what we do to cows, for example, or they easily could, but we don't, we break that connection. So this is ethical intelligence, and I think it's really a mark of how mature spiritually anyone is to see where they draw the line, you know, how, who can we harm? And I think the more sensitive we get, the more unwilling we are to gratuitously harm other living beings when we don't need to, and we don't need to eat animal flesh or cheese or meat or or eggs. And that's been proven and shown. There's millions of vegans, happy, healthy, walking around. Once we understand that and really explore that, we see that it's not necessary to cause this kind of violence. And once we understand that, then we know what we have to do.
What kind of little boy were you? Were you always sensitive to animals?
Actually, you know, I don't know. I was born and raised in a typical heavy meat-eating, you know, family up in New England, and I never really questioned it. I went to a summer camp in Vermont where we participated in the killing of our own chickens, and we ate them, and then we participated in the killing of a cow.
Oh.
We all killed this cow with a gun, and cut its her head off and
ate her. That seems like child abuse.
And well, maybe, but it was great for me because I actually saw it, and I think it planted a big seed of this is really shocking what we're doing to animals. And it took a few years, but I when I heard about vegetarianism and actually met people who were vegans, I just jumped in because I knew what was going on behind the scenes. And I think if anyone really looks behind the scenes especially the modern techniques of the horrific abuse and castration and mutilation without anesthesia of animals, and the horrific ways that they're actually killed, and even that they're killed at all, it's unnecessary.
And the male chicks, every male chick is killed.
Right, even on so-called free-range egg operations, for example, all the males are killed, and most of the females are typically debeaked, which is extremely cruel. So this idea that's kind of spreading that, well, it's okay to eat, if the meat is organic or if it's humanely raised, it's still slaughtering lives. I mean, it would never be okay to do that to humans, to humanely slaughter them. So it's
double
standard.
You walk up around Whole Foods and you see people that feel so good about buying, grass grown or farm-raised.
Right.
And I just...
it is difficult, too, for people to give up dairy and eggs. They don't see that. It was difficult for you, Janice. It was difficult for me because... And we do have to understand that. And I'd like to talk about that because I decided to quit eating animals in 1961. But I didn't give up dairy and eggs until 1984. And Janice, I think you were a vegetarian for 25 years. And my husband says you're not a vegetarian if you eat eggs and dairy. But he thinks that now. I mean, now that we have educated ourselves on the horror behind the dairy and egg industries. But can you address that?
Sure. It's I have a whole chapter called The Domination of the Feminine, and I talked about it a little bit. But it's what we do typically to dairy cows is really horrific, and chickens, of course, it's even worse. But basically, in order for a dairy cow to give the amount of milk, a cow normally in the wild would only give 25 pounds of milk a day at the most, and we force these cows through giving them hormones like prolactin, progesterone, estrogen, and testosterone, whole packet of hormones to give about 110 pounds of milk a day. And the other way we get them to give so much milk is our scientists discovered if they eat cholesterol, they give more milk. So we have these cows eating not just grass or grain, but eating animals, eating huge amounts of meat. half the fish that are caught are fed to livestock. So they're eating fish, they're eating roadkill.
Other cows, too.
They're eating, well, that's the thing. They were eating their own babies because there was too many babies being born, so they were grinding them up, sending them to the rendering process and feeding them to their own mothers. And that was the fundamental cause behind mad cow disease, this, insanity of the system. So, it's a very insane system that dairy is based on.
I love the way that you explain the rise in certain things such as rape in our society and how you connected it to what we do to the
right.
The cows. Can you tell?
Yeah, I know we're getting short on time, but
we are. Shirley, we will hold that question till tonight.
All right.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about that tonight.
And yes, let's talk about that tonight.
Well, I was just lost in this conversation.
No, I know we were too, and I want to invite everyone that is listening and friends of yours to join us this evening at Barnes and Noble
at 6:30.
6:30 for the reception for vegan appetizers that Banyan Food is preparing, and Shirley, you will be introducing Will at 7.
Right.
And the Barnes & Noble is at 7626 Westheimer at 7 p.m.
It's near Hillcroft, and for people who knew where Ten Ren Restaurant was, it's kind of across the street from that.
Barnes & Noble. So please join us this evening. It's a free talk, and it's a book signing, and this will be a great time to get copies for your state representatives and friends and family. So thank you, Dr. Tuttle and Madeline and Cesar. We will continue our conversation this evening.
Great.
Thank you for listening.
See everybody tonight.
And thank you, Shirley, for joining us. And we will all see you tonight at Barnes & Noble. Thank you, Mike, for running our boards. And everyone, remember, every animal you eat was running for her life. Show compassion. Go vegan.